It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. Mike Ward on assignment this weekend. It's all right. We'll get him back with us soon. And it was great seeing everybody out at the Mobile Boat Show last weekend. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for being part of the Guides Corner. Big thank you to all our fishing guides, inshore, offshore, and freshwater guides out there. And we'll do it all again next year. And we've been giving folks have come by and picked up their buckets all week long that they won in the drawings at the FM Talk 106.5 booth there at the boat show. Got more of those buckets and more chance for y'all to win. You got a boat. Anything else? I think it's the perfect thing. I've been 30 years in radio, giving away bumper stickers, hats, the huggers, all those things. To be able to give a rope handled quality bucket away is, I think I've finally arrived in radio. So it's fun. We gave those away. Of course, we're in the boat show, and we got more chances through this show. And coming up, we'll be at the Wharf Boat Show and more chances for you to get those logoed FM Talk 106.5 buckets going forward. So don't worry if you didn't win one before. Don't worry, they're coming your way soon. All right. So that out of the way, but we'll get Mike with us back next week on the show. All right, y'all know him, you love him. He's Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, and my friend Chuck Sykes joins us now on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Good to have you.
Good to be here. How can I get one of those genuine rope handle buckets?
I know a guy. His name is Sean. He can probably, because you have to buy them in bulk. You can't just... You get with these companies to buy something. You're like, hey, can I buy 10? They say no. Or you can, but they're a gazillion dollars each. So we bought plenty. I would love to have one there. Because, yeah, not just on a boat. If you're somebody in the outdoors, you use them. But, I think everybody does. But in the outdoors, whether you're hunting or fishing or whatever, quality rope handle bucket, man, is a good piece of gear.
Absolutely. That could be a gut bucket. It could be a trapping bucket. It could be a feed bucket for the cows. I mean, it's multi-purpose.
You said trapping bucket, and we may get into that. That's how I carry, you and I have never compared, but that's how I carry my trapping gear. It's buckets, because I can keep everything separated, and like with dog-proof traps, I can hang them out the outside so they're easy to get to and they don't get all tangled up. I'm big on a trapping bucket.
Yes, sir, and it's that time of year.
Yes, and I want to get into that. We want to talk some trapping with you, but first, it's like every time I turn around, and it's well warranted, new accolades for you out there. And we had talked before about the being added as officer for the National Deer Association, and then I see this here recently, National Wild Turkey Federation honoring you with the C.B. McLeod Award. For your productive and enduring, I think that means you're old, Chuck, productive and enduring career as a wildlife manager and dedication to conservation. So congratulations on that, and I'm impressed. I didn't know you had a suit. I'm looking at a picture of you in a suit. Good stuff.
A suit and a white beard. I could pass for Santa Claus. white beard.
But let's talk about this, because we're going to get into some turkey talk. With this recognition from the Turkey Federation, what's it mean for you?
Sean, I really don't know that I'm deserving of it. I'm very appreciative, but when I sat down at the table that night and was looking at the brochure of the events ahead, and they had probably the last 20 recipients on that list, and I know you have everybody from Dick Kirby to Tom Kelly to Dale Wrong. It was very humbling. I don't know that I need to be in the same category with the gentleman, but I'm very appreciative of it.
I think it's well warranted, too. And you talk about some of the names on there. I think you fit in perfectly, because people you just mentioned are people that are absolutely passionate about turkey hunting, but they're even more passionate, I feel that about you, about turkeys, right? I mean, there's some great technician turkey hunters, and you're definitely in that league, but not all of them line up as being people that are just as interested in turkeys all across the landscape that you are.
Well, I told them that I've been with the Turkey Federation for as long as I can remember through my consulting business. I always have booth up there talking to clients and people that watch the television show, judging the contest up there. It's amazing the change and the different aspects that I've seen of the Turkey Federation over the past 20-some-odd years, going from just a redneck consultant in West Alabama to the director of the agency. And it's, again, it's very humbling to be presented with that award. And, yes, it does mean that I'm old, because usually they give this to somebody on their way out as a Lifetime Achievement Award. And I hope I've still got quite a bit left to give.
It'd be like, hey, y'all, I don't need this right now. I don't got one foot in the box yet.
Yeah, I would love to be able to retire and just hunt and fish, but I'm too broke and still too young to do that. So I'm going to be around for a while longer, I hope.
Yeah, I think you will. You know, I thought about this too. You're talking about your career and your relationship with the Turkey Federation and the changes out there. But this is, as we talk about it, I don't want to get into it because we've talked about it, the challenges we have in Alabama and elsewhere in the Southeast with turkey populations. We're kind of seeing Turkey Federation starts, right, with people trying to put turkeys back on the landscape, places there weren't turkeys, trying to restore populations. And then it goes through this arc of what I would grade, and I'll ask you, but to me, from not being a scientist, a pretty dang great success on getting turkeys back on the landscape in so many places, and maybe even places they weren't pre-Columbian. And then we're now dealing with another side where it's now a challenge again, right? So, I mean, there's a kind of an arc there for turkeys and the Federation.
It is. I mean, you went from where there weren't any to massive restocking efforts that NWTF and state agencies all over the country were at the forefront of. And now it's habitat work and research trying to figure out, you know, exactly what all's going on. And I will have to give accolades to the state chapter. I mean, they actually put their money where their mouth is. We have worked with them ever since I started. They would have super fun projects where a WMA manager might get a burn torch, and one might get a disc, and one get a bush hog to do management activities. And at that time, Phil Savage was the Alabama chapter president. And I sat down with Phil and I said, I don't know why this hadn't been done, but I'm new and I'm just asking questions. Out of all these projects that y'all fund, why don't you write us a check to the Game and Fish Fund? I'll make sure your projects get earmarked and get funded. But that's state dollars that I can match 3-1. So I can take, let's just say, your $5,000, and I can turn it into $20,000 for habitat work. So they really stepped up, took a chance on that model, and we have really done some great things on public land throughout the state over the past decade working with NWTF.
I mean, for acquisition of property and making that property better, for sure. People who hadn't followed this, we've discussed it in the past, but that magnifying effect, right? How does that work? Talk about that matching, why that's important. What's the equation, Chuck? How does that work?
In the most simplistic terms, it's 3-1. For every dollar that I raise of state money, which 99% of what we get of state money is selling hunting and fishing licenses. For every dollar of that we generate as the division with our Pittman Robertson and Daniel Johnson federal excise tax dollars, we can match it 3-1. And then several years ago, they made an amendment called the Target Marksmanship. That's TARMARC for short. And we can do that 9-10. If we're doing it for shooting sports. So when we're building shooting ranges, for every $10 of state that we put in, we can put $90 of federal money to it. So you're talking about a return on your investment. If you're a hunter or a fisherman, we're maximizing that input.
Well, I'm thinking about that. So that time period, that coincides. People are probably sitting there going, okay, I get it. Because I've been growing up, I don't think I knew of any public shooting ranges. And now, I mean, we've got them all over the place. So that makes sense how that worked.
And, Sean, I mean, you know this, but a lot of people don't. Give hunters their credit. They were there from the beginning, and they are responsible for the introduction of all these species, the management, where everything, not just hunting species, have benefited. But over the past 3 or 4 years, hunters are not paying the lion's share of conservation. Target shooters, recreational shooters, and just home defense gun and ammo purchases, they're paying the lion's share right now. So, again, being good custodians of that money, we've got to do something for those constituents.
Right. No, that makes sense.
We're trying to put quality shooting ranges in places that is easily accessible to folks that aren't comfortable going 8 miles down a dirt road into the Delta to shoot at our WMA. You know, they may have a Lexus and live in a subdivision, and
right. They
just bought that gun for personal protection, and they need someplace safe to go shoot. So we're trying to use those dollars wisely and provide locations for these people, because, you know, even if they don't hunt and fish, they need to understand what we do and why we do it, because they vote, and we need them to be on our side.
Well said. Well said. Coming right back, more with Chuck Sykes, Director of Alabama's Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. Think about the list, and actually we'll talk about how you can get the list of the shooting ranges when we come back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Mike Ward on assignment this week. I think, isn't that what they say? The fancy news people say on assignment. He's on assignment, but he'll be back with us next week. Continue our conversation with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, our buddy Chuck Sykes. This, you can look more on this award by going to NWTF.com as the National Wild Turkey Federation has honored this guy right here, Chuck Sykes, with the C.B. McLeod Award for productive and enduring career as a wildlife manager and his dedication to conservation. And I want to get back to that. I do want to just visit this. We talked about the ranges and how that happened in our state. If people want to access that information, how do they get it? If they said, okay, yeah, I'm one of those people, I want to go shoot, how do I find out where a range is near me?
Everything that anybody needs to know about us, they can go to outdooralabama.com. It's all there, and it's got a list of all of our shooting ranges. Alabama leads the nation in community archery parks. So archery ranges, we've got them all over. So especially for the archery hunters, we've got all kind of places for them to shoot and just target archers. But we do have probably a dozen rifle, pistol, shotgun ranges scattered around the state.
You mentioned the archery thing. It's great to see it in the schools and all those places. We're close to the same age. I never had that option. I don't know if y'all did in Choctaw County. I didn't have that option in school. I mean, I'd have jumped on that. I mean, I look at like that and then collegiate fishing teams. I'm like, where was that when I was in college, or where was that when I was in high school? You know?
Yeah. No. Yeah, we didn't have that opportunity. We just had our own fishing team.
That's true.
On practices and that kind of stuff.
That is true. Let's talk about going forward. Let's look in the rear view for a second. When the data comes in here through Game Check for this last deer season, how far delayed is that? Something we get in the summertime, or when do y'all start getting that information? Like put in? I don't know if you put in a spreadsheet or how it comes in.
Sean, it broke up for just a second. Try me again.
No, I was asking about when do y'all, just looking backwards for a second at deer season for this last year, when do y'all get the data in from Game Check and all that? Is that something that's delayed? Does it come as a spreadsheet to you? I just wondered how it comes into the department.
It's something that you can go to Outdoor Alabama right now, and you can look at county statistics, state statistics, compare it to this time last year, make your own spreadsheet of the last 2 or 3 years in your county and see when the harvest was and what it did. I mean, it's all there for public viewing.
So, yeah, if y'all go, I think the game check and harvest record information there, yep. And you could...
On Outdoor Alabama, it's right there for everybody.
Are we, Trenton, we can talk a bit about, of course, reporting or people not reporting, doing game check, but are we using the information you have, which is all you can do, are we trended up in harvest, down in harvest, across the state, even any kind of trends that you're seeing?
We're pretty constant. And we've been doing, hunter surveys at the end of the year through mail and through phone for decades. And we're still doing those as well and using it to compare to what we have of our game check numbers just to make sure, just a double check. But everything still looks really good as far as the deer numbers go.
Yeah, deer, see, at least we talk about the two biggest hunted species in the state, or we're talking about deer and turkey. I mean, maybe dove eclipses it, but let's stick with deer and turkey. One of them, you've got to navigate this for what we hunters want for antler size and all that, and then obviously navigate CWD and all that. That, but deer kind of, do good if, they're trending right. Then the other side of it is this turkey world, right? I mean, one probably takes more of your time than the other. I would imagine it would be turkey and what's happening with our population.
Yeah, and it all depends on who you ask and what science they want to believe. I told some people the other day, we had our board meeting last Saturday, the first CAB meeting of the year, and had a guy send us an email wanting, he had a request and wanted, it really doesn't matter what it was, but I sent his request to Keith, wildlife chief, and I said, how about getting me some data on this? So Keith put together a real in-depth reply to this guy and to answer his questions. And the guy sent a nice reply back, said, man, this is great. Thank you for the prompt response. It is so reassuring to know that y'all are using data to inform your decisions. I still don't like it. I'm coming to talk against it.
Well, I mean, it's at least a half victory, right? Somebody appreciated the use of, because that's y'all's currency. That's y'all's tool as managers.
Well, and that's what we deal with. People are extremely supportive of the data. They're extremely supportive of what we do till it disagrees with what their personal philosophy is or something that they don't want to do. And then they're against us. And Sean, I just didn't grow up that way. You're either with me or you're against me, because I'm the same person that uses data, whether it benefits me or not. Data is what's supposed to drive this system. And there's some cases where the data tells me that we need to do things that negatively impacts me. But that's when I've got to do a little soul searching and say, is this about me or is this about the resource? We've got some people out there, like yourself, it's about the resource. But unfortunately, the majority that we hear from, they can say it's about the resource. They can say they love turkeys. They can say they love deer. But the proof's in the pudding. They love themselves a lot more than they do the resource.
I wonder if we just take let's on deer for a second, though. I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions, but I would guess majority of hunters in Alabama, beyond just maybe the state regulations, but if they're hunting private land, lease land or something like that, they're in a club or whatever, they put some kind of limitation on it, right? They might want to, they might still want to shoot that 5-point that walks by, but they don't, right? They don't shoot that little eight. They don't. They put themselves a limitation because they're keeping data, right? And they're looking for bigger bucks on the property. So they've checked. So, I mean, that's just a micro version of what the macro is for the state. So I don't know where the breakdown is, because so many people will be, well, my club, we're 8 points or better, and not to get into the whole idea whether that's a good idea or not. But, they're doing this management. But then when the state talks about doing it, then there's some kind of something disconnects.
It's the government, man. Well, you know Casey, that used to work for me with the show. He sent me an email the other day that he had been on some forum that was just ripping me to pieces. And he said, man, I don't know how you do it. When I worked for you, everybody loved you. And you're doing the same thing now. You're still managing the resource. And from what I see on social media, you're basically the most hated man in Alabama. comes along with the territory.
Well, I don't see that. But what you're saying is doing the same thing, you just have a different title. And the reaction is different.
Instead of a .com behind my email address is a .gov. And at that point, I don't know anything.
These ideas that are offered, and you've talked about this in the past, I think this is important for people to understand. We'll talk turkeys, that it's not this one thing that could fix this downward trend, but in your capacity, y'all only have certain levers to work, right? I mean, you could say all these other things that could be done, but y'all can't put in habitat management on private land in Alabama. So you can only do what you can do, right?
And the only thing that we have authority over is seasons and bag limits. That's it. I would love to be able to say you have to burn, you have to thin, you have to do predator control, and, you know, all of this. If you have a bad hatch, you don't hunt your place this year. I mean, all that's just common sense. But we can't enforce that. We can't make people do the right thing. So the only thing that we have at our disposal is seasons and bag limits. I mean, me personally, on our place, we have not killed a turkey in 4 years.
And your reasoning for that is why?
We did not have enough. They were getting hunted hard all the way around us. Our hatches had not been good. I could see a downward trend. So we decided, if a turkey can make it through the gauntlet and hang out on our place, we're not going to kill it.
But on a scientific side, I want to talk about this. I've always read and been told at a certain point that gobbler's expendable, right? If you're banking him, you're banking him to have another year to hunt him. But in the biology, does he matter after a certain point?
In my opinion, it wasn't worth taking the chance. Every available male that was there, I wanted there to breed as long as they could. Yes, technically, we could have probably gone in May and tried to hunt and killed one, and it would have been okay. But, Sean, it wasn't worth it. And this year, I've got more young turkeys, more Jakes and Jennies on our place than we've had the last 4 years combined. We did some timber thinning. We did some burning. We hadn't hunted for several years. We're going to probably hunt again this year.
Well, I mean, finally hit a number for you, you know, that you said, okay, it's reached a point you think of, I don't know, recovery's the right word, but it's a safe place to start hunting again.
That's right. I mean, we're at a point where on our place, we may kill a turkey this year and then back off and let them go, but we won't shoot anything till over in April. I'm not going to mess with them for you.
And that reason for people hadn't followed these discussions, somebody is, I'll tell you what, we'll go to the break because I'm right up against the break. I want to come back. I want y'all to listen to what Chuck's talking about here because there's a reason. There's a method to the timing out there, and we'll get into it when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and we'll continue our conversation with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, habitat manager, game biologist, and I'll say this too, when he says something like they've chosen not to hunt turkeys for years on the property, that's a big lift because this man, I mean, I've been around you long enough, you'd like to see a gobbler die. Geez, can I out you like that? Is that okay?
Oh, no, 100%. That is my most favoritest outdoor activity.
Yeah.
And we just, I didn't feel comfortable hunting our property.
So you said something interesting, many things, but right before we went to the break there, you talked about you for sure wouldn't hunt them till when?
It's going to be into April before we will take a bird off our place. And look, we could discuss this for a week, but when we were at NWTF at the convention, there are days worth of talks there, not just about turkey calling and call making, but research talks, habitat talks. And the two things that I took away from this that was, I guess, the most impactful is we've been saying for years, or I have, and wildlife and freshwater fisheries, we're killing too many too early. This is the only ground nesting bird that we hunt during their breeding season. Mm-hmm. We didn't know it, but common sense would have to say something we are doing is having a negative impact on breeding. That's just, you don't have to be a doctor to know that. That's just common sense. And we've got historical stocking data from our state, not anybody else's up in North Alabama that I've presented before, that shows that killing too many too early had a detrimental effect. The peak nest initiation in Alabama, so that's when the hens are laying and they actually get on the nest, is around mid-April, like the 12th through the 15th, 16th of April. So until a few years ago, we were hunting 1 month prior to nest initiation. The states that have their seasons coinciding with nest initiation are fine.
Yeah,
whether you like it or not, I like hunting turkeys in March just as much as anybody does. But again, I'm putting me aside and I'm looking at what's best for the birds. So, 2 points that I took away from a lot of these talks was, absolutely, we are negatively impacting breeding success by hunting during the spring. Now, I'm not saying we're ever going to quit because I love it, and there's too many people that do, but we've got to be cognizant that we are an issue. There's a research project going on the Savannah River site, a 900 population. There's a 100 population close by, and they are looking at both of them. The 900 bunch of birds, 90% of the hens are nesting within a 3-week period. On the hunted side, it spread out over 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So it's the same thing with deer, and you and I have talked about this forever.
Mm-hmm.
Forget coyote and bobcat trapping. Just forget it. We're going to keep all of our numbers of predators the same, or raccoons or whatever. If you drop all of your fawns in a 3-week period, the predators can only take so many. But if you drop them over a 3-month period, when your buck-to-doe ratio is out of skew and it takes them a couple of cycles to breed, then that same number of predators are going to be able to take far more of the offspring because it's spread out.
Yeah, they can't eat them all, that the predator swamping idea. Like if you put 500 hamburgers in front of me at one time, you know, but they have a duration, I can't eat them all. But if you give me 5 each day, I can.
Right. Well, the same thing with turkeys. So something is causing them not to all breed together, not to all nest together, not to all bring off little ones together. So
let me interrupt for a second. That would be, from your perspective as scientist, I mean, that's the natural, that's what that Savannah site's showing, but that's the natural occurrence, right? Without man, the critters do that.
That's right.
Okay.
That's what they do when we're not in there messing with them.
Okay.
So I don't know what it is. Are we killing dominant gobblers too early? Are we just in there harassing them and causing them not to do what they naturally would do? That I don't know. But common sense is we're hunting them during the breeding season, the only ground nesting bird. We have to have an impact on it.
When
states that are hunting them later, their numbers seem to be more stable than states that hunted them sooner. You don't have to be a PhD. This is just common sense.
Right. I throw this in, though, because I'm sure somebody might ask this, but what happened during the 90s, right, that we had these great populations and we're hunting, like, there was a time that they were trending up. I mean, you know, there were turkeys in places, people, you know, I guess it's 90. Really, for me, it started late 80s, early 90s, I guess. I started seeing that.
Well, I'm in that same boat. I grew up hunting then, too. And Sean, you could get in 90% of the hunting clubs around, pay your dues, tell them you wouldn't deer hunt, and you had the place to yourself during turkey season.
That's true. I was one of those guys.
Yeah. So now, and again, I use thermosails. I got my little chair. I got a sub-gauge 410 with TSS that's deadly. So technology has made us more effective killers, and it's made people that when you and I were hunting were unsuccessful, they can now be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more of us taking more birds and more pressure. And you'll have the naysayer say, well, there's not many people that's killing but more than one or two. You don't have to kill to cause a disturbance. You know that from deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to shoot on a food plot every day, but if the wind's wrong and you're going in and you're bumping deer, eventually they come at night. So not saying killing is all the problem. It's the disturbance during that peak time of breeding that I think is causing the problem. There's a bunch of science out there that's showing that. But the other thing that I learned up there is when we think about hunting, we think about taking the surplus. You know, well, there's 70% of mourning doves are going to die in their first year, so mm-hmm. you might as well hunt them.
Right.
You know, that's the way we have looked at it. Well, the latest research is showing that hunting turkeys is additive mortality, not compensatory.
And this is important. Yeah, I mean, you kind of explain it for people who hadn't heard this. I mean, this means it is not that those turkeys wouldn't, if they were not hunted, they would not die. Not all of them, but right, that population wouldn't be lost to other things, like you right. say with mourning doves or quail or other things like that.
And that's what that Savannah Riverside is showing as well. And look, think about it this way. I'm hunting on a piece of private land that nobody but us and whoever we take hunts. We have very strict rules and regulations. I monitor what deer are taken off, how old they are, and how many, based on what I think the neighbors are doing and what I'm seeing on camera. Okay, so I'm an anomaly. But say me and you and 15 of our buddies go in and we lease 3,000 acres.
Right.
And we can all, according to our rules, we can kill two bucks, six does, and two turkeys apiece.
Okay.
That's what our membership gives us. And me and you have done all of our scouting. And we know there is six gobblers on that place. How many of them do you think are going to die?
Yeah, all of them.
All of them, because everybody wants to get their money's worth.
Sure.
So
I've been that guy. I've been that guy.
Yeah. You spread that over the landscape, and it starts adding up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have some of your viewers are going to be throwing bottles at the radio and cussing me and cussing you, and that's fine. But sooner or later, and I hope I'm wrong, we're going to get to a point where it's going to fall off the cliff. There is a situation where your hunting numbers can remain constant, but your population still be declining. So go with me on this. This was very interesting. I sat down and talked to Dr. Chamberlain for a long time about this.
Okay.
In their trapping, where they're putting these little backpacks on all these hens, there was a guy that actually worked for us as an intern. I think he's in Nebraska now. And if he shoots a net over 30 hens, 20 of them are juveniles.
Okay.
All right. Dr. Chamberlain and Brett Collier in Louisiana, when they're shooting a net over 30 hens, 29 of them are adults.
Oh, wow. So, like, almost no recruitment.
So go with me on this now. Our poult per hen this year was as low as it's ever been since I've been there. It was below 2.
And tell but folks that that's what y'all use to see how the population's doing, right? Poult per hen is that. Okay. Yeah.
So let's just say you've got 3 poults for every hen out there. That's when you are supposed to be good on your numbers, is 3. All right. What they are seeing now from this trapping, and it just makes so much common sense. You kind of kick yourself when you hear it. That's what I like about Chamberlain's research. They're proving scientifically what, if we think about it, common sense tells us. All right, so you've got a hen, and she hatches 10 poults, and they're 50-50. She's got 5 jakes and 5 little jennies.
Okay.
Bad weather, where mama's warmth is at a premium, who's going to get closest to mama, the jakes or the jennies?
I'm going to guess the jakes.
Of course. They're bigger and stronger. When they're out foraging for food, who's going to get the best?
Yeah, sure. The jakes, yeah.
So what they're seeing right now is that even though population numbers are fairly stable in some areas and hunter harvest is stable, your hen population is going down. Your gobbler population is staying sort of level. But at some point, you're going to hit a cliff.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
It's scary.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Arkansas about a decade ago.
Because if people hadn't followed that, Arkansas, y'all went from a state that had pretty good turkey hunting to almost shutting it down.
Yeah, I mean, they basically shut their seasons down. I think they had like a 10-day season, and you could harvest one bird. There was no jake harvest. I mean, it was drastic changes, and their populations are rebounding a little bit. And look, in 10 years, I hope I'm wrong, and people can say, see, you idiot, you didn't know what you were talking about. Would nothing make me any happier?
Well, I mean, something's going on. I mean, I think that's the thing you got to agree with. Yeah. Yeah, you have a total collapse. I mean, that you could have, as much as I like the idea of gobblers everywhere, there's not gobblers long term if there's not hens everywhere.
Yep. So that's
sobering.
Things that I took away from the research meetings at the NWTF convention this year.
Coming right back, more with our buddy Chuck Sykes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward is on assignment. They'll be back with us next week, so not to worry. He'll be good to go. Continue our conversation with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes. By trade, he's a wildlife biologist, habitat manager, and a turkey freak. I don't know. Can you call that a trade? Trade is a turkey freak out there. But how about this? How about we wrap this up with what these bigger concerns are? And, yeah, discussion of what y'all can do at a state level. You only have so many levers. But if you're telling somebody, you got like a 2 minutes right here. You as a consultant, you're going to get to consult the general public on what to do on their lease or their own land. What would you have them do this season with turkey hunting to try to, if they're worried about their population? Give me some quick takeaways.
They need to be doing proper habitat management first. You know that. That's number one for me. Proper timber thinning, spraying Kogan grass, getting rid of invasives, prescribed burning, creating, brood rearing, nesting, all the food sources and all the cover types that they need for turkeys to be successful. I would probably throw in some predator control now, bobcats, coyotes, raccoons, and possums, and then be intelligent when it comes to hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And try to hold your harvest as far as you can conceivably hold it into April before you start really blistering them.
And that is, people didn't listen earlier, that is because that keeps you from interrupting the breeding, right?
That's what research is showing, and that's what common sense tells you. If we can get those hens, you said this earlier in the show, you should be able to take all the gobblers at the end of the season, right? Well, if all the hens are bred and all the hens hatch, in theory, everything 2 years old and older, you should be able to kill every year, and you will never shoot yourself out of business if you have good recruitment. But y'all, as a state, now I know you're going to have people, well, I got turkeys on my place. Sure they do. There's spots all over that are fine. But we have to look at statewide, and statewide, our recruitment numbers are in the toilet.
Yeah.
Something's happening, whether you want to admit it or not. Something's happening.
Yeah. I mean, you're taking away from – and that's a tough thing too. I mean, even if you're lucky enough to be hunting on private land, you're part of a bigger group. So you got to think about it. Even though you may have a population that seems good, maybe the overall area doesn't, you know, and that's a tough one too, to think about, dang it, am I doing management to benefit these guys down the road that may not be doing it the right way? It's a tough decision, but think long-term, you're probably right. Chuck, I appreciate your time. We got to wrap it up for today, but hopefully get you back on here very, very soon.
Yeah, maybe you folks won't rebel and you can have me back on at some point.
That's fine. We'll have you, even if they rebel, we'll have you back on. There he goes, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes. And we'll do it all again next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.